It's been a long time since I was a university student. I can remember loading stacks of punch cards containing my Fortran programs and hoping that the huge Burroughs mainframe wouldn't reject it for some silly error I had made. And I'm also old enough to remember remote terminal access, that kind of sounds familiar today, and timesharing on the school's mainframes. A lot has changed in education and technology since then, and who better to bring us up to date than an expert in both fields? Lev Gonick is the CIO of Case Western Reserve University, so he has the duties and headaches of a CIO, as well as the opportunities and challenges in dealing with thousands of really bright students who only saw punch cards, or Fortran programs for that matter, in museums. Listen as Lev explains why this is such an exciting time for technology and education. Coming to you from the world-renowned Magnum Building on beautiful Payne Avenue in the heart of Cleveland, Ohio, it's the entrepreneur himself, Dan Hansen, bringing you the Great Lakes Geek Show. Today we're speaking with Lev Gonick. Lev is the Vice President for Information Technology Services and the Chief Information Officer at Case Western Reserve University. How are you doing, Lev?
Great, Dan, thanks.
All right. Hey, tell us, how is the position of CIO different or the same at a university as compared to a traditional for-profit enterprise?
Well, I mean, we all carry around the same Tylenol 3 collection of headaches, but I think... you know, inside the university environment, the CIO typically deals with a degree of ambiguity in terms of command and control that is of a different order of magnitude than many of my colleagues in the private for-profit sector, who typically are authorized and actually being held accountable for a series of services in which it's quite clear where authority and responsibility lie. Inside universities, because we have shared governance and we have lots and lots of, if you will, different CEOs, you know, at this university, you might argue that there are 2,400 CEOs and each one of them is called professor this or that.
Right.
And so that's the major difference in terms of the degree of ambiguity and the need to navigate between lots and lots of different stakeholder interests.
Okay. You know, in your blog you say, I can't think of a better and more exciting time to be involved in the world of education and technology. Why is that?
Well, I think, you know, we are engaged right now in a really exciting transition to in terms of the life cycle of the way technologies are being used on the college campus around the world. The reality is that for a good decade, not unlike any other enterprise, in many ways technology was rate limiting to what people wanted to have done. You know, the networks weren't necessarily as robust as we wanted them to be. The core applications were a bit kludgy and didn't really all hang together. And you could go on in terms of sort of the reliability and dependability of the IT services. And now, really, because of the maturity of the technology, new models for allowing organizations to focus in on core competencies and letting others sort out context-related issues, it's an extraordinarily exciting time because we're actually able to focus our investment on the college campus, on the things that will make an outstanding experience for the undergraduate or the graduate student or the professor doing research, because we're able to dedicate more and more of our available resources to those differentiated offerings rather than figuring out how to run an email system. You know, we're not in that business anymore. How to compete for storage. You know, we're just not in that business anymore, and that really allows me to take the resources I have to create a better learning and teaching environment.
Well, for those of us who haven't been to college in a long time, how is college life different for kids today because of technology than it was 20 or so years ago? You know, what's a typical scenario for a student?
Well, I mean, in our generation, and that sort of just dates you and I mean, we were among the first group to figure out how email worked. And, of course, email was your parents' generation, and kids today are, I'm telling a little story out of school here, as we're talking, my daughter, who's at college, is IMing me as we're talking. So, you know, that multitasking, I'll just tell her that we'll be back later, that multitasking, you know, is part of a reality that represents, I think, a significant qualitative shift from the way in which technology is sort of evolving as an ecosystem for students, and where in our environment it was pretty much like the first generation of cars following the cart and horse, very much looked the same. Our first experience in technology was very much an extension of the traditional way the office or the university worked. These students are engaging in the use of technology in a more transparent, seamless, and pervasive way in which, you know, the multitasking that goes on, the willingness to really, without thinking about it, engage in the co-creation of educational content. I get a group of students a week coming through here with a new idea on a business they want to create. I mean, in our day, that was rare, and here it's a cycle of increasing excitement on how technology can create either fun or learning-related opportunities, and a sense of what's possible. Again, I think in many ways, because the tools for co-creation, for creating content, are becoming at one hand simpler to do, less complex to troubleshoot and bug fix. And although one might argue that the code is not perhaps as sophisticated as it used to be, or ultimately as fundamentally sound, what it is it's allowing us to really let students and faculty deal with a kind of rapid prototyping strategy to bring ideas out for testing and perhaps ultimately adoption.
You know, with the students today, they're so bright, and there's that leap that they grew up with this technology that those of us who are older had to learn and experience that way. It's almost a two-way street in learning. It sounds like you and your 2,400 professors are learning things from these bright students as well as you're teaching them other disciplines.
Right, and Dan, that's kind of an inside-the-family conversation. That's the kind of conversation we have here at the university, because, you know, there used to be a time and place where, you know, the professor was the sage on the stage and basically, you know, was the oracle, knew everything there was to know. And the reality is that, you know, that's less and less how we define an outstanding teacher. The content that students can surf in real time dwarfs any ability of any human being to kind of capture all that, synthesize it, and bring it forward. But of course, faculty have that students really are keenly interested in is experience and actually presenting a synthesis of how all of that information makes sense in a context that's relevant to the course, are relevant to a business opportunity or challenge or a social work situation. And getting the relationships, you know, in many ways they're power relationships, so those are important to be careful about. But you're absolutely right. Students are definitely helping faculty in ways that many, many faculty are now embracing. And while no one wants to look bad in the class, the reality is that, you know, students are serving as coaches in some ways about how to use the technology. And faculty, once they understand the opportunities, are bringing their experience, their ability to bring both content and synthesis into play. And the best kinds of courses that I see, at least, are those where there is this kind of what I'm calling co-creation. It's not because the students know more than the faculty. They don't, but they can bring tools into play that make the content exciting. I think there's extraordinary, you know, activity going on, you know, in everything from traditional course to, you know, to gaming, to virtual worlds, and other collaborative tools.
You've been listening to the Great Lakes Geek Show. Come back soon at www.greatlakesgeek.com.